Happy Halloween, guys and ghouls. I hope that you're all costumed and candied and well ready for this edition of Fireside Chats with Danny Innie, because today we're going to be talking about the ghoulies and ghosties and long-leggedy beasties of your business, your monster customers. So we're working online, building our businesses, making relationships, and closing deals when, not all of a sudden or all at once, but gradually, you start to realize that while you love your business, your customers are driving you freaking nuts. I mean, you work so hard to serve people well, to provide great value, reasonable prices, killer engagement. You give and you give and you give, and they just don't care. Or don't listen. Or plague you with problems until you're ready to pack it all in and go to bed with a cup of hot tea for several months. Congratulations, you've entered Monsterland, where every new customer is a potential fright fest. It's not the end of the world, however. These monsters of business aren't all so bad, and there are tried-and-true methods of dealing with each and every one of them. We're going to start with the customer who can be the most annoying, a brutal time and resource sink. You know the one, you see an email from them and you can kiss the next hour of your life goodbye, which would be fine if it didn't happen every other day and twice on Sundays. I'm talking about the high-maintenance customer. Danny, why do these people demand so much of us, and what can we do about them?
Great question, Megan, and I've definitely seen a lot of those emails and cringed as the name pops yet again into my inbox. And what we've got to remember is that these customers, the ones that are so very high maintenance, they're not doing it because they don't like us, they're not doing it because they're ungrateful. They're usually doing it because, first of all, they care, they're engaged, they're invested, otherwise they wouldn't be taking so much of our time, and we've probably done a lousy job of setting expectations, setting boundaries around what is reasonable, what is appropriate, what is acceptable, and what should they be legitimately asking for, and what is kind of out of bounds, what is beyond scope. And it's very understandable because this is the kind of customer that, you know, they like what you're doing, they're engaging with the work, they're sending you questions, and so of course you want to help them out. So you send them answers, you give them suggestions, and it keeps on escalating because they send you more questions. They take those answers and that engagement on your part as an invitation to engage even further. And it's not a bad thing, because these are the ones that, while they're the most demanding customers, the most high maintenance, the most exhausting in some cases, they're also the ones who are most likely to turn into your most vocal success studies and your strongest evangelists. So it's not to say that it's absolutely not worth it, but it is exhausting, it is demanding, and you do have to set boundaries, otherwise there'll be nothing left of your time.
So what are some of the best ways that we can set and manage expectations for customers so this doesn't come up?
Sometimes you can do it up front, but most often with this kind of customer, it's actually best to do it as the problem does begin to arise, because you don't want to create these systems and these processes and policies that kind of discourage customers from reaching out to you or engaging with you. You just need a way of pushing back when it starts getting to be too much. And it's easy to kind of feel like this customer is walking all over you and to react in a kind of defensive way, but you shouldn't, because again, they're not doing it intentionally. They are reaching out because they really appreciate your time and your input. And so what I would recommend is the next time they send something like that to you, they send a question, they send a comment, they send a request, you answer it just like you always have. You say, here's my suggestion, here's my solution, here's what I recommend. And you say, you know, I really appreciate your sending me these questions. It's just a matter of volume. You know, I'm happy to answer them. But for example, you might say a couple times a week would be great. A couple times a day is just too much. It's a level of service that people usually pay me quite a lot of money for. And if you want to explore that, I'd be very happy to work with you. Not that I'm pushing you to do that, but if you're not interested in that, that's totally fine. But we just have to kind of adjust how frequently we're interacting, because I'm spending like 30 to 60 minutes a day answering your emails kind of thing. And usually be very, you know, very accommodating and even apologetic. Like, they don't mean to be taking so much of your...
Mm-hmm. So the next customer that I've got on my list is the snarling aggravation known as a refund hunter. This is a customer who will buy your product and service and get everything out of it that they possibly can and demand a refund days or even hours before the window of that opportunity closes. It's absolutely infuriating. And worse, sometimes these people will sign up to be affiliates so they can buy the program or service at a discount through their own link. And when that happens, there's no guarantee that they'll become a good customer over time or anything else, or you'll have a good relationship. Danny, what do you recommend in these situations?
Most importantly, just don't take it personally. There are people like that. As you get bigger, as you achieve more success, a small portion of your customer base is going to be people like that who are just trying to kind of grab what they can, scavenge, and then walk away without paying for anything, probably without doing anything. Don't take it personally. You know, there's a small portion of the population that's like that. They're not representative of your audience. Don't go overboard trying to put systems in place to punish these people or to prevent them from getting in to begin with, because you don't want to discourage the people that are actually your customers. These are kind of the weeds that get stuck in your garden. Don't kill the garden just because you want to get rid of a couple of weeds.
Is there any way to kind of identify them or pinpoint them before it gets to that point, or do you just kind of have to wait and see?
Not easily, because they're the lurker type. They're the type that isn't going to engage. I mean, they're going to try to get in, download everything they possibly can, save it onto their hard drive, probably never watch it, never do anything with it. But they're not the ones who are going to send you lots of questions. They're not the ones who are going to engage and interact. So it's really hard to notice them. I'll see sometimes a sale come in. If it's from an affiliate account that I don't recognize and it's only the one sale, there's a decent chance it's someone buying through their own link. And I know that the refund rate on those sales tend to be a lot higher than otherwise, because it's kind of someone who's looking to just get as much as they can with as little as possible investment. It's not a strategy for business success. They're not going to do well in the long run. And just let them go. Don't even lose sleep about it.
Very good to know. For the next customer I wanted to talk about, everyone listening, I'm positive that you have at least one of these. This is someone who will pay a good and fair price for your skill and expertise, but then they're going to argue with you about it every step of the way. This is a perpetually unsatisfied customer. They can be arrogant and jaded, and you can't teach them anything because they know it already. How does this kind of come to be, Danny, and what is the best way to deal with these folks?
Yeah, this is another one of those profiles that you're going to see every so often. They're going to pop up from time to time. It's one of these puzzles of business. I don't understand why they buy stuff from us if all they want to do is complain and they don't think it's going to work. If we were to really dig down and say, well, what's going on here? It's kind of sad. It's someone who's been burned quite a lot, is very cynical, very jaded. They're still out there. They're still trying. They bought your stuff because they're kind of desperate to be rescued, but they're so antagonistic to the possibility of being taken advantage of yet again, that it's almost impossible to help them. I call it the ex-girlfriend syndrome. It's where you kind of take out on the new person the sins that your ex-girlfriend perpetrated on you. So it's kind of the same thing. Maybe they bought something that didn't work for them, or they were taken advantage of, or any number of things, which is really unfortunate. And that stuff shouldn't happen, but it does. And they're hurt, they're jaded, and they take it all out on you. The unfortunate reality is that you're a business owner, you're a service provider, you're an advisor, you're not a therapist. The odds of your being able to help someone break through all this noise and head trash are very slim. So what I would usually recommend when you start detecting this pattern, I'd send an email just calling them on it. Say, I feel like you're being very critical or very, very concerned, very frustrated about things that really don't seem to apply to our interrelations together. I mean, I feel like you're not really listening. You're not really giving my advice or my product or my service the benefit of the doubt or the chance to work for you. And if you're skeptical, if you don't think it's going to work, that's totally fine, and I'd like to issue you a refund. But basically tell them in much nicer words, you know, cut the crap, or you're out.
It kind of sounds like you can see this kind of behavior if they engage before they actually buy something and you could kind of prevent it. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. And actually, a great example of this is with Marketing That Works, we offer a guarantee, a very strong guarantee, that you're going to add $1,000 to your monthly bottom line within 6 months. And if you haven't within 6 months, assuming you're doing the work and reaching out to us when you need help, we'll give you your money back, no matter how much you like the program. The only exception is someone who doesn't do the work. Someone who, you know, says they're going to go through all the content and reach out to us, and they stop reaching out to us for help like 2 weeks into the program. Now, occasionally when we put this training on sale, I'll get people who reach out to me and exchange 5-10 emails back and forth before ever buying, and they want to know the exact specifics of the guarantee. You know, what exactly is my window to get out? How do I know that I'm covered? What if this happens? What if that happens? And I know that they're not really interested in creating something for themselves. They want to, you know, put down the cost of the program. They want me to go and do the work for them. And they're not going to be there as a partner trying to get results in their own business. They're going to be there trying to play gotcha when something isn't happening quite as fast as they want it to. And you can't create success for someone else. It's just impossible. People have to get the results they want themselves. And you, as a teacher, as a guide, as a facilitator, can help them to get there. But in a situation like that, I'll just tell them, you know what, I really appreciate your interest, but I don't think this training is right for you, and I wish you the best of luck. I've had people kind of tell me, this is where I'm coming from, I'm concerned, I'm this, I'm that, should I sign up? I tell them, no, I don't think you should. I think it would be a waste of your time and a waste of our time, and not in anyone's best interest.
It sounds like some of these perpetually unsatisfied customers dovetail really well with the next kind I was going to talk about, which is the sloth. So the customer who will buy your product and then let it sit in a folder on their desktop for months and never do anything with it, so nothing changes. And it's frustrating because you know they could be doing better, but they won't. Do you deal with that in kind of a similar way, Danny?
No, that's a little bit different. It's a very different kind of profile. And we have to acknowledge, first of all, that it's very common. I saw once a case study. I don't remember the details or where I read it. I believe it was Dan Kennedy, but I don't know if I actually read it or someone told me about it. But the gist of it was that he sent out some follow-up survey to get a sense of how people are using his training. This was about something fairly expensive, like a $1,000 physical box of stuff that they ordered and good stuff. And there was a 5-point scale ranging from, you know, I've used it and it's made me hundreds of thousands of dollars or something to that effect on the one end, to it's still in the shrink wrap. And the proportion of people who answered that it's still in the shrink wrap was frighteningly high, maybe 30% on a $1,000 training. And that just makes you kind of scratch your head and be like, well, what else could I have done? And I don't want to say that, you know, that's not your problem as a business owner, as an instructor, as an educator, as a product or service provider, as a marketer, because it is incumbent on you to create something that will help as many people as possible. You know, instructional design, which is something we can talk about in a later podcast, is something very important. The way you deliver the content is something very important. So you do have to do all that. But past a certain point, you have to just recognize that, like, look, I've done everything I can, and it's still incumbent on other people to take some action, to go through my stuff, to reach out to me for help. And it goes back to what I said before. You can't create success for other people. Now, there are a lot of reasons why people don't take action, and it's kind of understandable. You know, we all want to achieve more than we're achieving. We all get excited with these visions of what might be in our lives. And when you buy something, it's often that aspirational part of you that is reaching for a better life that makes that decision. But when it comes time to do the work, it's a different part of you that takes over. It's, you know, oh, but I have all these things going on and I don't have time and it's going to take money and energy. And, you know, what if I fail and there's risk? And we all face this kind of internal struggle between our better angels and our greatest demons, if you will. And as a marketer and as a product and service provider, you can try to tailor your offer to give the better angels of your customers an upper hand. But at the end of the day, it's still their battle to fight and their battle to win.
So you can appeal to the aspirational part of someone's nature or feelings about their business, but you still have to try and cater towards the actual, like, the workhorse aspect as well. They actually have to do it. That's really interesting. I've only got one monster left on my list today, and that is a freebie seeker. So it's customers who just scour the entire internet for free programs, videos, ebooks, papers, articles, anything else they can get their hot little hands on. These customers will subscribe if they have to, but you can bet that your beautiful emails are going to go straight to a filter and will never see the light of day again if they stay subscribed at all. Danny, what do you say about this type of customer?
Well, first of all, let's be clear, that's not a customer. That's
a good point. Very good point.
That's a drive-by for the marketer.
My bad.
There's two sides to that, right? And again, it's kind of, there's only so much you can do. Some people just want to grab your stuff. And again, the people who are so uninvested and so expect to be taken advantage of, when let's face it, even if you get put on an email list and, you know, you can just click and unsubscribe. It's not the end of the world. So if people are so very cynical and jaded and unwilling to invest any of their time or attention, there's only so much you can do for them. And there's going to be a certain number of people like that. And, you know, you want them off your list. So that's totally fine. Again, what you can do, though, is set expectations around how this is going to work, which is something that we do if anyone signs up for our free video course. And if you're listening to this on Firepole Marketing, then there are boxes somewhere on the screen or on elsewhere on the page where you can sign up for our free video course and check out the introductory email where we kind of set the stage for here's how this is going to work and here's what we're going to expect. Another thing that you can explore doing is structuring your free offer so that it's not something that they can just pocket and download and walk away, but rather it's delivered maybe over a series of emails, or it requires a certain amount of investment or engagement on their part. And, you know, it serves a dual function. Part of that is that you just, you know, you want to give them something that they're actually going to use and see as an entry point to a relationship with you. But the other part is that if they just pocket your PDF and save it on a folder where they've got, you know, 400 other things, they're never going to look at it again. They're not going to get anything out of it. So you want to do what's best for you as a business owner and as a marketer, but you also want to do what's best for this prospect by helping them move in the direction of becoming a customer. And whether they become a customer or not, the process of moving in that direction is about they're extracting value from the relationship. And so you just want to make sure they get something out of it. So part of it is the way you structure it. The other part of it is just out of your hands. And some people are, you know, in that place. They're not. It's a lot like trying to get into a relationship and meeting someone you like. You can be the best person possible to get into a relationship with someone, and there's always a lot you can do to work on yourself. But beyond a certain point, you know, the other person has to be there too.
That sounds kind of like with this kind of customer, it might also be that they just haven't fully cottoned on to what we're doing yet. And if you give them time and get them in the habit of reading the emails and engaging with you, then they might over time turn into a better customer entirely.
Mm-hmm. Which is a part of managing expectations. You just have to be really smart about how you do it up front. Because if they're signing up with a throwaway email address, downloading your thing, saving it, never opening it again, there's kind of no opportunity for that to happen.
Well, that was my list of customer and uncustomer monsters for today. But Danny, was there anything else you wanted to add or address on this issue?
Well, yeah, in the spirit of Halloween, you know, we all get dressed up, we all go trick-or-treating, and we like to put on these masks and faces of scary, terrifying creatures. A lot of the challenging experiences we have with customers is not who they are at their core. It's not the person that they want to be or the best self that they try to bring to the situations they care about. We see them when they're wearing some kind of scary mask because they're feeling vulnerable, they're in a difficult place in their day, week, year, or life. And first of all, don't take it personally. And you should try to rise above and help people take that mask off and be a better person. So, you know, we jokingly called this podcast the Ghouls, Goblins, and what did we call it?
Ghoulies, Ghosties, and Long-Leggedy Beasties.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's Halloween and the time. But that's not what your customers are. That's not what people really are. People can aspire to be great things, and you as someone in a service position, in a stewardship position, can help them get there. That's the final thought I'd like to leave everyone with, and wish everyone a happy Halloween.
I'll second the wish for a very happy Halloween, and I agree that's a perfect note to end on. So I will just say that if you have enjoyed this podcast, we would love it if you would subscribe to our channel in iTunes. You can follow a link below this post, and then you will never miss one of our episodes. And if you've got an idea for a podcast, let us know in the comments, or you can email me at megan@firepolemarketing.com. Have fun and be safe today. Bye-bye.